Celebration of the disappearance day of two great personalities. First of all, Srila Jiva Goswami, and also Jagadish Pandit. And I'll be speaking about, hopefully I'll get to both of them, but I wanted to start with Srila Jiva Goswami. So we're going to Timananda Shah, Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshur, Meditam, Vina Tasmai, Shikarveda Maha. So, of course, Jiva Goswami is the nephew of Rupa and Sanatan Goswamis. And his father's name was Anupama. And incidentally, his father was a great devotee of Lord Ramchandra. And it's interesting how devoted he was to Lord Ramchandra that his brothers, that's Rupa and Sanatan, wanted to convince him just to chant Hare Krishna. And they tried, and they tried, and they tried, and Anupama started crying because he couldn't give up the lotus feet of Lord Raghunath. That's very nice. And so, because we know ontologically that Krishna is two Bhagavan Swayam, that Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, and all the other expansions are expansions of his expansions, or just expansions of him. And still, his mood was to be attached to Lord Ram. Similar to the story of Murari Gupta, Lord Chaitanya's associate, who is Hanuman, the incarnation of Hanuman. So anyway, so his brothers praised him for his dedication to his worshipable deity. So his son was Jiva. And Jiva Goswami, because he's much younger, obviously, than Rupa and Sanatan Goswami. So it's described that Jiva Goswami was born in the year 1513 A.D. and left in the year 1598 on this particular day. And Jiva Goswami's ontological position, that is his position in Krishna Lila, is as a Manjari Gopi, Valasa Manjari. And Manjari Gopis means very young girls, prepubescent, who serve the divine couple, Radha and Krishna, in their pastimes in a very intimate way. So you'll find many of these Goswamis and personalities in Krishna Lila and Gauranga Lila were Manjari Gopis helping the divine couple. So he was born with a golden complexion. And actually, I want to talk about this golden complexion stuff. This is very interesting. I was thinking about golden complexion this morning. Not because I have it, but anyway. Because Lord Chaitanya is Gauranga. And then I actually Googled on the internet, molten gold. On the internet. Molten gold means gold that's melted. You understand? So generally, when we think of Lord Chaitanya, we think of, I don't have any gold rings or anything like that anyway. Oh, my glasses aren't gold. Oh, Jen, does anyone have any gold here? Well, that's more like molten gold, yeah. So that's true. Anyone have any, like, real gold? Gold rings, all right. Anyway, we don't want everyone to look at your gold rings. So gold is usually extremely shiny, but molten gold is more like that color. Actually, no, golder than that. But anyway, so, like, Prabhupada actually had molten gold colored skin. You know, he was molten gold. There you see it. Well, that's not really the accurate color of Prabhupada's skin. You see a picture. I was looking at pictures of Prabhupada this morning. Anyway, so more like the Bhagavad Gita or something. Anyway, that's a little whiter than Prabhupada was. I remember being with Prabhupada in 1971, sitting in his room, and he was wearing a gamsa, and seeing his whole body, you know, except for the midriff, and he was golden. He was really golden, molten gold. So, therefore, I can understand the complexion of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So, Jiva Goswami also was born with this molten, golden complexion. And when he was a little baby, Rupa and Sanatan met Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Ramakeli. That's when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was on his way to Vrindavan And Rupan Sanatan advised Lord Chaitanya, don't go to Vrindavan right now, because Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was accompanied by hundreds and hundreds of devotees. He said, yeah, when you go to Vrindavan, it should be something very, very personal, not like a whole circus. So taking their advice, Lord Chaitanya actually turned back and went back to Jagannath Puri. It's interesting, isn't it? It's a lesson for us too. So anyway, so while Lord Chaitanya saw Rupert Sanatana and Mama Kelly, while they were still engaged in government service, Lord Chaitanya initiated them by giving them the names Rupan Sanatan. Previously, they were Dabir Kas and Shakara Malik, working for the Muslim government. And Jiva Goswami was a little baby at that particular time. And so he got the darshan of Lord Chaitanya as a little baby. And you'll see, in the case of some of the Goswamis of Vrindavan, they actually got the association of Lord Chaitanya when they were children. Like Gopal Bhatta Goswami, he was like 5-6 years old. He got a chance to actually sat on Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's lap. Pretty good, isn't it? Boy, I would love to have that mercy. Not now. I'm too big. And similarly, some devotees got the chance to sit on Prabhupada's lap when they were little babies. Actually, one of my disciples sat on Prabhupada's lap. And it was my poor Chandra. Prabhupada was playing with him. That would be amazing. Anyway, next life. So Jiva Goswami, he got that opportunity too when he was very, very small. His father left with his father's brothers, which were Rupan Sanatan Goswami, to join Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he was left with his mother. And when he was young, he would always worship Gornatai deities and Radhakrishna deities. And he would have dreams of dancing with Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda. When he was very young, this is, I guess, after his mother passed away, he went to Navadweep to see Lord Nityananda. And he met Lord Nityananda at Srivas Thakur's house. That's, of course, where the 24-hour kirtans or 48-hour kirtans or whatever longer kirtans were. And the next day he was personally fed by Sachi Mata, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mother. Then Lord Nityananda took him on a whole tour of Navadweep and showed him all the different, this is Navadweep Mandal Parikrama, led by Lord Nityananda. That's another nice thing. Imagine going around Navadweep with Lord Nityananda saying, well, this is where Lord Chaitanya did this, this is where Lord Chaitanya did that. Wow. Wow. If I ever become qualified for that, that would be amazing. So Lord Nityananda told him, you should go to Kashi. And why should he go to Kashi? Kashi is actually a place in Mayavadis. Well, there was a very great scholar there named Madhusudana Vachaspati, who was a disciple of Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya. And he instructed Srila Jiva Goswami in all these siddhantas and tattvas of Vaishnavism. And let me explain what it is. Siddhanta means conclusions. Conclusion means Krishna's two Bhagavan Swayam. That's a conclusion. you should worship Krishna. Anyway. And tattva means like the different, something the tattva triad, the material energy, spiritual energy, and the jiva soul. And Vishnu Shakti Pra Prakta Shidra Yakitata Pra. Avidyakarma Sangyanyantra Tira Shakti Ishite described in the Vedic literatures the threefold tattvas. That's Krishna and his spiritual energy. Actually, there's more tattvas than that, but generally it's called tattva triye, referring to Krishna's energies. So there's the spiritual energy, the material energy, and the marginal energy, which is ourselves, the jiva soul. So he took instruction in that and became quite educated in Sanskrit grammar, rhetoric, and the Vaishnava literature and all the Vedic literatures. And so then he was sent to Vrindavan to associate with Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, who were his uncles. And he was given a deity of Radha Damodar by Rupa Goswami. And it's described by some of the acharyas that the Radha Damodar deity was personally fashioned by Rupa Goswami. Pretty interesting. Radha Damodar, Jaya Radha Damodar. And so he proofread Rupa Goswami's books, like the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, and rendered humble service to Rupa and Sanatana Goswami, and eventually he accepted Srila Rupa Goswami as his spiritual master. And so Rupa Goswami, as his spiritual master, really trained him up nicely in Krishna consciousness. And one incident of this is in regard to training in humility. That's the spiritual master's, one of his duties is to train the disciple to be humble. That doesn't mean he beats the disciple, but he trains him up, Brahmachari Gurukule Vasandanda Goror Hitam, to work for the benefit of the spiritual master. There's stories about that in the Mahabharata, how, and I've told this story I think here before, once upon a time, the guru wanted to train up his disciple to control his senses and not eat too much because the disciple was a little challenged in that department. Now you have to speak politically correct language. You can't say overweight. Anyway, you have to say challenged because people would call it, what do they call it, fat shaming nowadays. You can't do that, shame people. So anyway, so he was challenged. It's like if someone is stupid, they're called challenged. So anyway, in the old days, you just called them a muda. But anyway, but now you just say, oh, rascal. So the guru sent his disciple out to take care of the cows, and because he thought the disciple would lose some weight that way, and the disciple didn't because he was out begging and eating everything that he begged. You know, you go out all day long, please give me some this, some laddus, some pakoras, some pizza. And so the guru said, you know, you can't do that. When you beg, you have to give everything to your guru. And so, but still that didn't work with the disciple, because the disciple was begging one time for the guru and another time for himself. And he was told by the guru, don't do that. And so, but still, that didn't work as far as helping the disciple with his issue, because he was drinking the milk from the cows that he was taking care of. And the guru said, don't do that either. And that still didn't work, because he was taking the froth that the, when the calves were drinking from the cow, the froth would come out of their mouth. But so the guru said, can't do that because, you're taking something meant for the calves. And so, to make a long story short, he started to starve to death, ate some leaves from the tree, and he became blind. And he fell into a ditch. That was the guru's training. And the guru was looking for him, found him in the ditch, didn't take him out of the ditch. You know, what a guru. Left him in the ditch and said, pray to the Ashwini Kumaras, and they'll solve your problem. The Ashwini Kumaras, the medical doctors amongst the demigods, came and gave him some cake, and he said, I'm not going to eat this cake without my guru's permission. So he passed the test, got his sight back, and he lived happily ever after. Nice story. Anyway, so Jiva Goswami was trained up in a very similar way by Srila Rupa Goswami. One time, there was this conquering pandit named Rupa Narayan. And in Bengal, instead of playing football, they argued with each other. That's a more Brahminical way of competing, having arguments, or playing chess or something like that. Of course, in the Western world, they just play football, or what else do they do? Cricket in India. One time I was going around Govardhan and the kids were bothering me. And I was thinking, how can I keep them from bothering me? And I just had explained to them in Hindi that I was a famous cricket player. And I was praying to Giriraj for the potency to win the next match. And after that, they just offered obeisances. So anyway, so anyway, this conquering pundit went to Rupa Goswami, and he challenged Rupa Goswami to a debate. Rupa Goswami didn't even want to waste the time. He just wrote a certificate of, let's see, victory to this man called Ajayapatra, and the man went away, and he was bragging, look, I defeated Rupa Goswami and Sanatana Goswami. And so when he came across Jiva Goswami, Jiva Goswami said, hey, I want to debate with you too. And this guy was thinking, you know, this is just a little kid, you know, just a young man. And he debated with Jiva Goswami. It's described that he was defeated in 7 days and banished. He just left. I guess he had a call of nature or something when he was defeated. And he just left. So Jiva Goswami went to Rupa Goswami and said, basically, and that was the proper thing for him to defeat this person, because this person had offended Rupa and Sanatana Goswami. But the problem was that Jiva Goswami went to Rupa Goswami and he said to him, I have defeated him. Ha ha, you know. And so Rupa Goswami said, you know, anybody who has this false pride should not be in the renounced order of life. You don't belong in Vrindavan. Get out of Vrindavan. And that's really interesting. Because actually, to live in Vrindavan, one should be devoid of false pride. That's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur, of course, I'm not going to comment on some of the present devotees who stay there. So that's why Bhaktivinoda Thakur said that when you go to Braj, stay there for 2 weeks. He said fortnight, that means 2 weeks. Because if you stay there any longer, then you may commit offenses. And offenses are like 100 or 1,000 times more serious than Braj. Even I was speaking to Jagadaka Maharaj, and he was telling me that Srila Gorkhasharidas Babaji Maharaj originally resided in Braj, but because he was so afraid of committing offenses, he went to Mayapur. Interesting, isn't it? It's an interesting story. I mean, Jagadaka Maharaj knows all these amazing stories about the Acharyas and the Holy Dham. He's writing a book right now. He's taking that as that, and that book should be out hopefully this next year. Because he understands, you know, we all have very short time left in this material world, so we should write about our experiences in Krishna consciousness, our realizations, and of course, our experience with this divine grace of the Prabhupada. So, Jiva Goswami was bragging, and Rupa Goswami said, you know, you don't belong in Vrindavan. Get out. So, for a year, he lived in a tree in Mathura, the hollow of a tree in Mathura. Oh my God. That's dedication of a disciple. I've never tried that with any of mine, you know. You know, he'd probably just argue or something. Tell me I was wrong. So what happened is that after a year, Sanatana Goswami, who was in one sense the guru of Jiva Goswami, not initiating guru, but Shiksha guru, because he was the older of the two brothers, went to Jiva Goswami, Rupa Goswami, sorry. So Sanatana Goswami went to Rupa Goswami and said to Rupa Goswami, one of the precepts or teachings of Lord Chaitanya, you're not following. And Rupa Goswami said, you know, which one am I not following? You know, I'm chanting Hare Krishna, eating prasadam, writing Vaishnava literatures. And then Sanatana Goswami pointed out that he wasn't following the one precept called Jiva Doi. So Jiva Doi means literally compassion for all the Jiva souls. But it also can mean compassion for Jiva Goswami. So Rupa Goswami understood that and invited Jiva Goswami back to Vrindavan. And so then they lived happily ever after in Vrindavan. And so Jiva Goswami was renowned as the topmost scholar of Vaishnavism practically for at any time, as far as like scholarly work, like logical scholarly work, and he's known for his Shastrandharvas. He's also, which I'll describe in a second. But he's also known for teaching Swakya Ras to his disciples. And so there's a difference. There's a Swakya Ras, let me describe the difference, and Panikya Ras referred to the relationship of Krishna with the gopis. And so Swakya means that Krishna was married to the gopis. And Panikya means Krishna wasn't married to the gopis, they were married to someone else. And so it's interesting, like the Parakya is considered the highest understanding. So why did Jiva Goswami teach Swakya? He taught it because Prabhupada describes his disciples could not accept Parakya. And you see this, I've been narrating the Gopal Champa, it's very interesting, where there's a particular part of the Gopal Champa, and I don't remember everything verbatim, but there's a particular part of the Gopal Champa where it gets revealed that the persons that the gopis actually so-called married, they never married, they actually married Krishna. And actually they did marry Krishna because after they did the Kachiyana Vrat, Krishna stole their clothes and that was their actual marriage. Anyway, so this indication of Jiva Goswami's Gopal Champa. The Gopal Champa is an elaboration on the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, really, let's see, coming with so many more details about the stories of the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. If you're interested in hearing any of it, it's available, some of it, what I've completed, is available on iskandesiretree.com. Gopal Champa narrations, under my name. So, we're still working on it. So, Jiva Goswami taught about this Swakya Ras, because his disciples, they just couldn't understand. That's one point about Jiva Goswami. Another point is that there was a great emperor in India, a Mughal emperor. Mughal means like he was a Muslim, a particular type of Muslim. His name was Akbar. And he met Jiva Goswami and he was given a vision by Jiva Goswami. Jai Shishi Panchatapa Panchatapa Kijai. So he was given a vision. In Sanskrit, that's called a spurti. It's a new word for you. He was given a vision of by Jiva Goswami of the real Vrindavan underneath the Yogamaya covering that normally people see. And so by seeing that, he became so enlivened by Krishna consciousness, he was a Muslim, that he helped to construct many of the temples and paid for many of the temples' construction in Vrindavan. So Jiva Goswami was part of that. And another story about Jiva Goswami is that one time he was invited to Agra to have a discussion, an argument, discussion means argument, about what is more, which is more glorious, the Yamuna River or the Ganga. And so they were having this big discussion there, and he proved that the Yamuna was more glorious than the Ganga because the Yamuna is actually the consort of Krishna. It's really interesting. And then he made Akbar, who was this Muslim, that's it. What are we to do? Okay. He made Akbar, who is the Muslim emperor, promise not to hunt in Braj, which is actually really remarkable for the Muslims. He also was the instructing spiritual master for the great devotees Shyamananda, Narottamadas Thakur, and Srinivasacharya. So they resided with him and got instruction. And later on, he instructed them to take the books of the Goswamis, his books, and the books of the other Goswamis, and go on book distribution. So he was actually the original organizer of the first Sankirtan party. Pretty good. The marathon. So, and there's a whole story about how they took the books to Bengal, and the books got stolen, and this king, Birhambir, later on became a great devotee. Because he took initiation from Srinivasacharya, but that's not part of this story. So, as far as the temple that he established, that was the Radha Damodara temple, and that's the temple that Srila Prabhupada resided in. Prabhupada said the Radha Damodara temple is his eternal residence, And also at the Radha Damodar temple, the Goswamis of Vrindavan used to sit and discuss things in the back portion. I mean, I think some of you have been to the Radha Damodar temple. So in the back portion of the Radha Damodar temple, like the corridor in the back between where you got the samadhis, you know, there's a whole group of samadhis on one side, and on the other side there's Rupa Goswamis, Bhajan Kutir. That corridor is where the Goswamis used to take prasadam and talk with each other about Krishna consciousness. So very, very important point, this Radha Damodar temple. So, just to finish up with Jiva Goswami, we'll talk about the Sandarbhas, the Shat Sandarbhas, that means the six treatises on Krishna consciousness and knowledge and everything like that. Of course, the Tattva Sandarbha is the first one. The Shat Sandarbha is also known as the Bhagavat Sandarbhas. And in the Tattva Sandarbha, as is the tradition with philosophers, the first thing that was dealt with is epistemology, that what is the most important source of knowledge for us as Vaishnavas. And the conclusion was Srimad Bhagavatam. Srimad Bhagavatam is the most important source of our Siddhanta and Tattva. The second Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami. So these Sandarbhas are accepted by scholars everywhere. In fact, in Benares, there's even a department of philosophy named after Srila Jiva Goswami in the Benares University. Second Sandarbha is called, it's also called the Bhagavad Sandarbha, although all the Sandarbhas are called, sometimes called the Bhagavad Sandarbhas, and discusses the distinction between the Brahman effulgence and Paramatma, describes the spiritual world, and the mode of goodness, the transcendental mode of goodness, which is called Vishuddhisattva, and a little bit of the other two modes of nature. There's discussion of deity worship, the omnipotence of the deity, and everything regarding the deity, Krishna's quality, form, pastimes, entourage, etc. That's the second Sandarbha, sometimes called the Bhagavad. The third Sandarbha is called the Paramatma Sandarbha, and there's a description of, obviously, of the Supersoul in this Sandarbha, and how the Supersoul exists in everyone's heart, and everybody's atom. And there's also a description of certain incarnations, particularly Leela Avatar incarnations, and the Supreme Lord's qualities as Bhagavan, six opulence, strength, beauty, wealth, fame, knowledge, and renunciation. And the fourth Sandarbha is called the Krishna Sandarbha, and there it's proved that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There's a description of Goloka Vrindavan there. It's really amazing, these Sandarbhas. Krishna's manifestation in Gokul, the queens of Dwarka, listed for all the gopis, not all the gopis, but the primary gopis' names, and a description of Srimati Radharani. The fifth Sandarbha is called the Bhakti Sandarbha, and discussion about devotional service, how you've been executed, and how you realize the self through performing bhakti, and how you achieve the lotus feet of the Lord, the discussion of Raganuga Bhakti, and the purpose of becoming a devotee. And the sixth and final one is called the Priti Sandarbha. Priti means love. This is a thesis on love of Godhead. And you hear, you find a distinction made between the personalists and the impersonalists as far as their liberation, and how one can meet the Supreme Personality of Godhead face to face, and also a description of all the different rasas, you know, the Shantaras, Dasharas, Sakyaras, Vatsalyaras, Madhuryaras, and then also the indirect rasas and the conflicting rasas. Conflicting means like rasabhas. Yeah, when is it appropriate to have a mixture of different rasas, when it's not appropriate. I'll give you an example of an inappropriate. Inappropriate would be, I love to hear Krishna's flute because it reminds me of the Brahman. That's an inappropriate mixture of rasas. I mean, that's an obvious one. It reminds me of the Brahman. I love to hear Krishna's flute because it reminds me of a mundane musician. That's inappropriate. So anyway, so then there's a description of ultimately there's a description of Vipralamba Seva in this last of the Sandarbhas, and a description of Srimati Radharani again. So, ISKCON is in the process of publishing. Of course, the Tattvasandarbha was translated by Gopi Pranadana Prabhu, and ISKCON is in the process of translating and publishing these Sandarbhas, which are extremely important. They establish the philosophy of Krishna consciousness in the most consistent way. So that's Srila Jiva Goswami, and just a few words about Jagadish Pandit, who's disappeared today. It is also today. So, Jagadish Pandit, actually, some stories about Jagadish Pandit from the Chaitanya Charitamrita and Chaitanya Bhagavat, that when Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was young, during the Nikadasi, he was very young. You don't have to follow Nikadasi if you're under 8 years of age. Or over 80. Pretty good. I'm waiting. 10 more years and no more Kadashi. Anyway. So, anyway. I'll probably still follow. So, Lord Chaitanya was very, very young, and he was crying on Ekadasi one time. And he said to his mother, "I want to eat the offering made by Jagadish and Hiranya." Hiranya was Jagadish Pandit's brother. And his mother was thinking, "What is he talking about?" He said, "I want to eat. I'll not stop crying until you give it to me." So finally they went to Jagadish's house and they found that he was worshipping the deities. And of course you worship the deities and offer food, even if it's a codicil. The deities. The deities don't fast on a codicil. Then you say to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on the altar that no food for you today. It's a codicil. And we're not going to close the altar tonight, because you have to stay up all night long. I don't think you do that here, do you? You know, the altar open all night long. Make Lord Chaitanya fast. No water. New job. No. So anyway, so Jagadish Pandit served Lord Chaitanya when Lord Chaitanya was a little child like that. So he lived actually very close to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's house. And he was married and had a very, very nice, her name was Dukini Devi. So Dukini sort of means unhappy, but, you know, transcendental unhappiness. And they built their house near the home of Jagannath Mishra. And he was instructed by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to preach Harinam, to go on Harinam and preach Harinam, especially in Jagannath Puri. And he obtained a deity of Lord Jagannath, and he brought this deity back to the Ganges where he lived, near the Ganges, and he brought it back suspended from a staff. You know, he had it hanging from a stick, had Krishna hanging from a stick, and this stick is still being worshipped near the temple of Lord Jagannath. So Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda used to go regularly to his village that he lived, and had festivals of Sankirtan. Let's see. Oh, yeah. So he gave, wow, he gave a deity of himself, Gaura Gopal, a deity of himself, and a Gopal, that's Krishna, to Jagadish Pandit's wife, Dukini Devi. And in the Gaura Ganadish Dipika, it says that Jagadish and his brother Hiranya were wives of the Vedic Brahmanas in Krishna Leela. Those were the wives who disobeyed their husbands. Nowadays you hear so many people say, "You gotta obey your husband like he's the supreme personality of God." I just got a letter like that the other day from a devotee here in Slovenia. Anyway, he said other things. Anyway, so a devotee in Slovenia said, "You know, you should preach." I'm not going to mention who it is. "You should preach that everybody should call everybody Matajiri." Not the man Matajiri. But anyway, so you should preach and then you should, the wives should obey their husbands like they're the Lord and Master. And I mean, if the husband's a good devotee, it's not a bad idea. More advanced devotee. But you have cases where, like Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya's daughter, Sati, so she she was told when her husband was an offender to Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, you have no more husband. And the wives of the Vedic Brahmanas ignored their husbands and stole the ingredients from their husband's sacrifice to serve Krishna. Their husbands were actually performing, getting ready to perform this Vedic sacrifice, and they heard from Krishna after the coward boys had informed their husbands, and their husbands actually refused to give any food, that Krishna and Balaram were hungry. So they just like grabbed all the food right from the fireside, right before their husbands were ready to go swaha. And the husband said, where are you going? And they didn't even say, we're going to see Krishna. They just ignored their husbands. They said, they didn't even say, you know, hasta la vista. They just like made believe their husbands weren't there and just marched off as if in a trance to give the food to Krishna and Balaram. So Jagadish was actually one of the wives of the Vedic Brahmanas and Krishna Leela. Pretty good. Pretty good. So let's see, is there anything else? Any other stories? But yeah, we already told the story about him, them feeding prasadam. And we already told the story about the Bala Gopal deity or the Gaura Gopal deity. Let's see. That's it. And today is the commemoration of his disappearance day. So any questions or comments about these two great personalities, associates of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Jiva Goswami or Jagadish Pandit? Any questions? Yes. Yeah. Yes, that's right.
Yeah, and I wanted to ask why is it that at least it seems that this work is easier to understand than some modern philosophy, and modern philosophy probably are not talking, or what they speak about is not complete rubbish.
Well, the reason many modern philosophers are very difficult to understand is described in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the predictions about Kali Yuga, that someone would consider expert if they can juggle words. Like if you use a lot of big words, then people will really admire you, even if you're saying something stupid. Like, I can do that too. I can use all these big words about philosophy, you know, like I've already done to impress you. Ontology. Oh my God, you must be intelligent. Epistemology. And the scientists learn, one of the ways the scientists come to conclusions through abduction. What's abduction? That's a technical name for inference. You know, so I can do the same thing, you know, and you generally find in the philosophical words that there's these big words that basically only the person who has spoken the words understands. And instead of speaking very clearly and succinctly, they just make things much more wordy. So that's why. But if you boil down even any of the Western philosophers, that's pretty easy stuff. Like Sartre, for example, or any of these people. I mean, you could summarize their philosophy in basically two lines. But they spend books and books and books and books explaining what you can say in two lines. And the Krishna conscious philosophy is very easy too.
There are all these Vedas mentioned, and you can summarize and put in all in this department all the modern philosophy. Probably you can in terms of these Vedas.
Yeah, in terms of the six different philosophies. Yeah. You know, karma, mimamsa, nyaya, yoga, different things like that. Yeah, yeah, you can pretty much deal with all the philosophies in terms of what Jiva Goswami taught us. And course, the main philosophy now is called the Epicurean philosophy. Anybody know that philosophy?
No, but that's not the same philosophy.
That's the main philosophy. That's a philosophy.
Yeah, but Epicurus was not a sex enjoyer.
Well, his philosophy was, and also Charvaka Muni was, eat, drink, and be merry. I'm not saying he was a sense enjoyer. That's called the Epicurean philosophy. Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow you may die. And Charvaka Muni, he had a Vedic version of that. He said, beg, borrow, steal, but get yourself some ghee. Because in the Vedic culture, that's the way to enjoy. And so I remember when I first joined the movement, everything was cooked in ghee. And I still remember the taste. And that's why I joined. Otherwise, I wasn't interested in spiritual life. I was interested in the pakoras. That's how much ghee on them. So, yeah, the pakoras, like cauliflower pakoras, especially, right? Yeah, they were very succulent. So anyway, so that's the primary understanding people have now. You just like, whatever you have to do, get some enjoyment. Fill the belly. You know, I have this nice song I wrote. Fill the belly, that's the goal. You're the body, not the soul. It's part of my Kali Yuga rap song. It's available on the internet. Kali Yuga's coming on fast, already got 5,000 years past. People living underground, selling human flesh by the pound. Kali's got four places to go. He's everywhere now, you know. Illicit sex, intoxication, you'll encounter in every nation, I forget all the words. Gambling and eating meat, you'll encounter on every street. No mercy, no one's peaceful or clean. I forget the words anyway. No mercy, whatever. Something about everybody's mean. People living underground, selling human flesh by the pound. Pretty cool. So it's a rap song, my original rap song. So that's the Kali Yuga philosophy. So, any other questions or comments? Yes, sir.
Yeah, I want to know that this with Epicurus, that I know that Karl Marx made a PhD or something out of studying Epicurus, and I also studied his philosophy, and he was very far, far away from sense enjoyer.
Yeah, I'm not criticizing Epicurus.
Yeah, he only lived on cheese and bread, and he was very... He started to make these communes and all this stuff. So why doesn't the society say that an Epicurean is one who is the sense enjoyer if this philosopher himself was very strict?
I don't know, you'll have to ask society about that, because generally that's... Generally, if you say the Epicurean philosophy is one that's sense enjoyment. So basically, he wasn't all respects and obeisances to Mr. Epicurus. So I'm sure he was a nice guy. I mean, these are philosophers. And, yeah.
I have another question. You were explaining how Jiva Goswami was severely chastised by his guru.
Yeah. Rupa Goswami.
Jiva Goswami was very heavily chastised with his guru, but he took it in a very humble way.
Yeah.
But what in the situation if a disciple does not take it in a humble way and actually becomes upset with the guru and then leaves?
That's interesting.
Goes away. My question is, first of all, what is the situation for this disciple? What actually can he do to come back to his normal situation with the guru? And also, what can other devotees do maybe to help him?
It's an interesting question. Actually, there's several things that are implicit in that question. First of all, the guru should know how much he can get away with as far as chastising. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, if the guru drives the disciple away, I mean, sometimes the disciple will leave anyway, but if the guru drives the disciple away by inappropriate according to time, place, and circumstance, and the person he's working with, then the guru has some responsibility in that too. So you have to really know, I mean, being a guru means you really have to know what you can say to people. And like Prabhupada, I mean, I remember one example. Prabhupada generally, you know, he preached against divorce. And one of my godbrothers wanted to get a divorce, and he wanted Prabhupada's blessing. And Prabhupada blessed him, and Prabhupada's servant, Shruta Kirti, was like shocked. He went to Prabhupada later on and said, Prabhupada, you know, you're talking against divorce, so what? You know, you blessed him, you know, this devotee, he would take him, get rid of his first wife. And Prabhupada said he was going to do it anyway. So I didn't want him to do it against my permission, because that would have doubled the offense. It would have been a guru aparada in addition to, you know, neglecting his first wife or whatever, you know. So I think that's one part of the answer to your question. And so, but still, you know, someone may still leave because he disagrees with the guru. And what should the person do? Come back. The guru is merciful. All you have to do is just come back and just say, you know, mea culpa. Okay, you know what mea culpa means? It was my fault, I'm sorry. And the guru's not going to say, yeah, I don't believe you. I mean, anyway, if he does it 100 times, he'll say. But generally, you know, the guru will say, you know, okay, forget about the past. Like Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, you know, you just don't dwell on the past. So you don't think about what someone did in the past. In general. I mean, there are exceptions to that. You know, if someone did something particularly nefarious, like child abuse, you don't forget that. But as far as in ordinary things, you know, the guru forgives. You know, Prabhupada was extremely merciful. There was only one case where Prabhupada just said, get out of here. And that was a case because a devotee was continually offending the other devotees. And I'm not going to give the devotee's name, it happened in Los Angeles. He went to Prabhupada and Prabhupada said, Prabhupada, you're my guru. I want some instruction. Prabhupada said, you have no guru. And then he said, but what's your instruction, Prabhupada? And Prabhupada said, my instruction is go out and enjoy the material world. Whew! That was the only time I can remember Prabhupada ever did that. Because the devotee persisted in his offensiveness, he didn't give up his mentality. So, whatever. So, but general, just go back and just say, you know, I'm sorry. And there's no problem. I mean, a genuine Vaishnava doesn't remember the past. You know, remembering the past is called in Bengali the naked mother philosophy. That because your mother was naked when she was young, it doesn't mean she should continue like that. In other words, you don't consider the past. It's gone. It's gone. I mean, I was looking at yesterday a video of myself 10 years ago in New Zealand and lamenting, where's it gone? That's Maya. Where's that body gone? And once, you know, even 10 years ago I had a younger body. And it was like, so I shouldn't even think about these things. We have very short time on this earth planet. That's what we can learn. If we see a picture of ourselves when we're young, that's one thing we can learn. We have very short time. We should just utilize all of our time for serving Krishna and Prabhupada. So any other questions or comments? No? I guess that's it. It's time for... Oh, yes?
Yeah, okay, but this one question. When Chaitanya was here, there was this group, Atibadis.
Atibadis, yeah. Yes.
So, when this leader of Atibadis came to Chaitanya, and then he said to him that, as you are the same Krishna, so I can say I'm the same Radharani, pointing to this point.
Yeah.
And then Chaitanya just said, oh, you're Atibadi, which in Sanskrit I think means you're too great. So he
yeah, Atibadi means too great.
And in another case, with all respect to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he then with one of his disciples, he just said, "Oh, you go kill yourself." So can you, you know, with the, this?
Well, he knew how to. He knew how to deal. He didn't say go kill yourself.
No, that you should make that to this other devotee who looked at this.
You talk Juna Haridas. You talk Juna Haridas. He didn't tell him to kill himself. Juna Haridas decided to do that. Lord Chaitanya never told him to do that.
Oh yeah, that's wrong. Okay, this is my mistake. That he should never see him. This, yeah, this is wrong.
He didn't want to see him, but after a year he agreed to see him again.
Oh yeah, on this darshan.
Yeah. After a year, he said, "Where is Juna Haridas? You can bring him here again." And then they said, "We don't know where he is because he had left his body." But it's not Lord Chaitanya didn't. And there's another story with Mukunda, where Lord Chaitanya said Mukunda was not allowed in the kirtan of Lord Chaitanya because he had been having some bad association with Mayavadis or something. And Mukunda had someone ask Lord Chaitanya the question, "When will I see him again?" And Lord Chaitanya said, several thousand births or something like that. And then Mukunda started to jump up and down in ecstasy and say, "Oh, at least I will see him, I will see him." And then Lord Chaitanya, understanding Mukunda's humility, said, "No, I can come back now." So I would say that Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada dealt with everybody according to the need of the situation and the person they're dealing with, according to time, place, and circumstance. So there's no real stereotype or, you know, typical way of dealing with individuals, because individuals are individuals. So Lord Chaitanya would deal with everybody, and Prabhupada would also deal with everybody in the most appropriate fashion, whatever was best for them. So, I think it's time to be appropriate and take prasadam right now. All glories to the divine grace, Srila Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada ki jai. It's nice to see everybody online. Ananda Mahajan ki jai.